there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Alrighty then, we are live with another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Today we are talking about the struggling that is continuing. Clark's play, Edmonton right on our heels. Blake's presser tomorrow, as well as some other topics. So get in the chat, like and subscribe. You know what to do. Let's go. All right, guys, we are ready to go here. We got everybody in the chat already firing on all cylinders. Cy was the first one in here, so we've got to pump that out. Go Kings, go. Depressing January, hoping for a cheerful February. I'm hoping for a late pick-me-up from January as well. We need to get this thing turned around. Lieb coming in here. Hey, all. Shake Master, what up, all? Let's talk some LA Kings hockey. Go Kings, go. Arby, what up, guys? Carter scores. I would have thought Rannan drank himself to death during the game yesterday. Laugh emoji. Go Kings, go. Let's get it. It wasn't far off there, Carter, but it was still a fun time. Hello, everyone, from CJ. Lee coming here with best intro music in the biz. So let's get going into this topics here. But before I do that, I just want to say what's up, guys, to my co-hosts here and see how they're doing. So how you doing, Russ?
Doing pretty good. I guess non-hockey related, doing pretty good. So it's been it's good to get, like, once you're out of, like, the mix of Christmas and, like, New Year's Eve, and then you had, like, some people were on and off because of MLK Day, and I feel like you can finally get back in the groove of, like working again. Like, this isn't our full-time job. We have full-time jobs. So it's like, once you get past all those holidays, now you're like, okay, got to get back to, like, a normal type of schedule, right? So I think I'm getting back in the groove of it. How you doing, Joe?
Can relate to that, Russ. So not only do you have Christmas, New Year's, and Thanksgiving before that, and with two little ones, Halloween before that. My older son's birthday is late November, so throw that in the mix. My younger son's birthday is January 10th. Throw that in the mix. So it is a jam-packed, like, 3 months. So not too upset to be on the other side of that. So can definitely feel where you're coming from there. So, Rannan, how were you? How was the game other than the disappointing result?
It was good. Family came out and visited. They came out during the coldest snap of the year. I mean, we were in single digits here in Texas for a little bit. So we just pretty much ate at restaurants that decided to stay open because some of them closed during we got snow. And then, just played some board games, played some dominoes, just chit chatted. We take the train to the game. So that's kind of fun, you know, sit on the train, you talk, and, it's fun. It's more fun on the way back when you have a W, you know, you're not getting trolled by Stars fans and stuff like that, but
naturally,
it was good. Tried a new little, pub spot right by the stadium that wasn't there last time I was there. So food was pretty good. Beer selection was good. So can't complain there. Just it sucks. I feel for my brother. I was telling you before the podcast, I think he's 0 for his last 7 games watching. Like, I haven't seen a Kings win forever. He's like, I've spent over like $1,500 in tickets, or almost $2,000, and I haven't seen a W. You know, it's like, Jesus.
Been there.
So, it's been good. Russ, how are you enjoying the pub the Chargers are getting for perhaps a new coach? I know Harbaugh interviewed there.
Yeah,
and everything. I brought up Vrabel to you on Twitter. What's the vibe around the Chargers fans out there in LA right now?
it seems like it's Harbaugh or bust. And I kind of don't blame a lot of Charger fans with everything that's been going on in the organization the last few years. They need a leader. They need a leader in the room. And Harbaugh is most definitely that with what he did with Michigan, what he's done with San Francisco before that. So he's proven it at all levels. And I think not just like his football mind is what'll be good, but his leadership, because I feel like if he's able to go and be a coach wherever he goes, he'll bring the talent along with him, whether it be a good offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. So, yeah, it certainly seems like it's Harbaugh or bust out here, and when I'm kind of on board.
Yeah, I think they do need a guy. And listening to a lot of podcasts, it's kind of tough because all the major head coaches that are there are more defensive guys. I mean, obviously Harbaugh played quarterback, but you know, with Belichick and Vrabel are defensive guys there. You kind of would like them to bring in an offensive-minded head coach to help with the quarterback and everything like that. So we'll see how that works out, but they need somebody. They need a change. Their culture seems to be non-existent over there. So that's something big that they need.
Very bad culture before during the Staley era.
Yeah.
So ready for change.
So let's get going here. Holden 92, come in and say what's up, Joe, Russ, and Rando. What's up there, Holden? King's Rule coming here. Hello, guys. I'm glad I saw you guys were doing a show. Glad you came in to listen. Johnny Utah, bring up Hellenius, a little Hellenius love. So let's get into it here. Recent struggles, obviously, we saw a win with Russ going. You went live for the game before.
Right? Red Wings game, yeah, which was fun.
So we saw a lot with Joe and I. Saw lots of guys. Maybe we should stop doing live shows if we keep losing. Our streak last year was undefeated.
Yeah, right. We were undefeated last year.
So let's talk about the recent struggles. Obviously, the loss, wasn't even close to Dallas in the 5-1 out there. We beat Carolina. Now coming back home. It doesn't seem like it's getting any better. No cohesiveness, no really consistency. The offense that we thought could come back from any insurmountable lead doesn't seem to be existent with this team. Like, where's your pulse on this team right now after this losing streak here?
Oh, man. I feel like in terms of the group in general, I think it's still pretty positive considering everything that's gone on the last few weeks. It's so strange. It's just been a strange few weeks. I mean, Kings obviously fly out of the gates with the road win streak. Everything was looking great. And you had the game in New York against the Islanders that seemed to be the point everyone's kind of looking at as being the start of this downfall. But, man, I mean, as much as it sounds like an excuse, you look at all the analytics, I mean, they're still right there. I mean, expected goal share, it's just been like one, I don't want to say fluke, but one fluke loss after another, I want to say. Even last night, like you kind of look at how that game went on, Jake Ottinger was just Jake Ottinger for the first like 40 minutes of the game until maybe the third period when it really got out of hand. I mean, it was 2-1 at one point, and Jake Ottinger was making saves to keep it a one goal lead for the Stars for quite a while, and the Kings definitely had their chances. So, I mean, considering what they were going through, the long road trip, the back-to-back after a really kind of an emotional win in Carolina before that, it certainly felt like they kind of ran out of gas in the third period there last night. So, but man, I mean, just the road trip in general is just, you look at some of the plays just to kind of recap. I mean, I think back to like the Florida game. Like, imagine if Pierre-Luc Dubois had scored that overtime winner. Mm. Just the whole mentality of the fan base, how that road trip would have shaped up to be that type of player to win that game with everything that had gone on. And then, of course, it just rings off the post. That's kind of a microcosm of the entire road trip, I feel like, just that play, just to have a player.
Microcosm of his season, too.
And of his season, too. Like, it's just to have that player be put in that position to end the win this streak, to put his name out there as a game winner with a game winning goal. And man, I mean, to see once that didn't go in, I was like, oh yeah, this is a loss. And sure enough, Reinhart wins with 0.7 seconds left. So I don't know. The road trip is just, I'm glad it's over. Thursday has that must win feel just by with everything that's going on. It's not a must win game, but it certainly has that feel in my book.
Joe, is there any specific player? Obviously, last night's game, we talked about it before the pod came on. I mean, they were shuffling D pairs left and right. Clark played most of his time with Mikey Anderson. We have a Mikey Anderson question there by Holden. I'll get there in a second. But is the shuffling of the lines, is this just kind of get like any T-Mac trying to get any sort of hope or continuity going into the homestand? Or how do you feel about the back half there where they were starting to kind of put people everywhere on the back end?
I think anytime you're shuffling lines up, you're just searching. You're searching to get a spark. You're searching to get something. When it comes to the back end, well, I'd be curious your guys' thoughts on this. It seems like they really shuffle it around even more so when Clark has been in the three games he's been in. I interpret that to be there's still a hesitation. I guess you could call that a lack of trust from McClellan and or Yanni to really lean into Clark and just give him a set pair to run with. The other side of that is maybe they just want to try him out with a few different guys and see what fits, see what works, you know, which I don't think that that's a terrible idea. Anyways, I still go back to the article that I wrote. It's like, why did they do this? What's the point? Their D was fine. Like, I love the idea of, obviously we all do, Clark coming up and playing. But if they're not going to utilize him in the way that we certainly think we should be utilized, what is the point? Because they're sitting one of their best defensemen for the last three of the last 10 games, and it's just mind-boggling. So I think part of that, Randon, could be a lack of trust in the coaching staff with how much they're moving the D around, or it could just simply be they're trying to find what pairing works for Clark. Or like you see with forwards, like the D has not been very good lately. So I want to, you know, Russ had touched on a lot of the you know, the expected goal share. And yeah, and for the season, this team is still top two in expected goals for per 60. They're top five in expected goals against per 60. So they're still really good. But when you do look at these last 10 games, there's a lot that's going wrong. And I know they're not scoring, be they have the 31st shooting percentage in the NHL, but they're eight, they're still top 10 in goals, expected goals for per 60. So they are still kind of creating some chances. The problem is they're 28th in expected goals against per 60. So there's definite issues, not to say solely on the blue line, but just in the D zone. Clearly some things are going awry there because they're not creating much less, at least in terms of expected goals and in the way natural stat trick tracks them. Again, there's different private models that may speak otherwise, but you know, you look at these last 10 games, they're having a real hard time in their own zone. They're not scoring any goals, and they have the 30th save percentage in the NHL. All of those numbers at 5-on-5 when adjusted for score. So it's like, you know, that you put that combination together, you're going to have a 1-5-4 stretch, and that happens. I guess, you know, you'd asked to Randon about the pulse. I generally think teams go through this. I'm still not like looking for, I'm sure we'll talk about the coach. I don't know that there's a need to have him fired or anything like that right now. A lot of teams go through this. A lot of good teams go through this. A lot of cup winning teams go through stretches, 10 game stretches where it's a struggle. It's how you come out of it, assuming you come out of it, you know, relatively soon here, and that it doesn't happen again. You know, the good thing is like they did pick up 4 points. Not a lot of times in a 10 game stretch like this, you get to pick up points, and at least they've managed that to at least salvage something. So it's definitely trying times though. It's definitely struggling times. There's no doubt about that.
So we're at the midway point of the season. You got 41 games, 50 points. So, I mean, they're on pace for triple digits, which, you know, if you say that at the beginning of the season, wouldn't be something that I think would be something that every Kings fan would take. Russ, I mean, or is there anything positive to take away from this road trip? Is it a play of a player? Is it something that you've seen that maybe they can build upon and turn things around?
No. That's what's so frustrating.
I was wondering where you were going to say that.
You watch this road trip, and it's like, yeah, you could point to like bad luck, shooting percentage, PDO, expected goal share, and all that stuff. And that's why, like, I get so mad at myself by rattling off those numbers. But it's like when you're trying to analyze the recent stretch, like we're trying to do. I mean, that's what makes it so frustrating. Probably even more so if you're the coach. I mean, because this is a lot of stuff that we had kind of been talking about last year when you had all these individual mistakes that would pop up, and it wouldn't just be like you're being outplayed throughout the entire game like we had seen at certain points. I think the only real game I can remember they were being outplayed, some of the Detroit game, probably the Detroit game, and then the Toronto game. Besides that, they've been in all these games. They've had out leads in most of these games. So when you're not able to come out of some of those games with wins or let alone points, that's what gets so frustrating, and you can't really point figure on it. So to say that there's anything positive, I mean, Kevin Fiala is looking pretty good. That's kind of continued. Trevor Morris continued to score. I guess the one real positive area to keep talking about is the penalty kill, because out of everything that's continued, that's like kind of taken this dip, power play struggled, 5-on-5 scoring has obviously struggled, goaltending, finishing. The penalty kill has been great all throughout the year. So to see that kind of continue, I guess that's the one positive we'll take.
I will say of their last 11 games, well, actually, wait, let me rephrase that. So, you know, there's the performance just it hasn't been good. And I actually think they have been outplayed, at least more so than normal. 5 of their lowest expected goals for percentages on the season, like in an individual game, have come in these last 11 games, 5 of them. So it's partly puck luck, right? It's partly goals aren't going in. It's partly, you know, Talbot's not making as many saves as he was before. He's not been bad, but he's not the all-star caliber that he was before. But this is also a team that is, they're not playing as good. As I mentioned before about the expected goals against, there's a problem there. So I don't think they're getting like badly outplayed in these games by any means, but there's an issue there. There are certainly struggles right now that point to they're not in control of games the way they were the first, you know, half of the season to date.
It just seems like, you know, sometimes teams like have small cogs like go wrong in the games. Like, oh, okay, that game, they just weren't as sharp, but they would still pull out wins. Like, you're not seeing that from the Kings on this road trip where they don't play their best hockey, but they still win the game. They're just getting beat every single time. Whether it's all the stuff that you guys have been saying, the puck luck and everything like that, usually good teams find ways to win a few of those games rather than just one. I mean, I think it bodes to where obviously the team can be hot. We saw it in the beginning of the season. And like I said, 50 points is nothing to laugh at. But most of the teams, like some team, I don't know the data, but it seems like teams like Boston, like the good Boston teams, the good those types of teams don't have skids like this. They're just, you know, they have a little less hills and valleys. It's more, you know, instead of mountains, you know what I mean? So I don't know if I'm just reading into that, you know. You guys watch a whole lot more hockey but from other teams than I do, but it seems like this was a one of the worst dips that I've seen in a while for a team that as good as we are.
I mean, look at the top three, or I mean, three of the top West teams in the Pacific Division. Edmonton started in a total valley, fired their coach, and look at them. They're on a peak, setting franchise record win streak. Vegas started off great. They were what? People were talking about how they didn't have that. What's Stanley Cup hangover? I think they had like one regulation loss in like the first 12 games or something like that. And now they're on a struggle, kind of similar to the Kings. So, and the Kings obviously with their kind of peaks and valleys through the first half of the season. So, I mean, all three teams are going through it. And like, I think it was Joe, it's like that said, I mean, it's how you come out of it. And that's why I mentioned like, man, Thursday, it feels like really such an important game for to have that like excuse, like, okay, well, the road trip's over. Let's just forget about it. You're playing against a team like Nashville, who's not necessarily considered a contender and not even really in your own division. So it's, you don't have that excuse either. So, I mean, to come back home on Thursday after the long, grueling trip, I mean, sure, Luxott's injured, which will definitely hamper the lineup a little bit. But, man, this – I mean, because I just imagine if you don't win that game on Thursday and then you all of a sudden you have New York at home on Saturday, pressure's on at that point.
It's a tough schedule, right? I mean, you play Saturday, then a back-to-back Monday, Tuesday, and then they have to travel. Now, granted, it was in Dallas. It wasn't like they were coming from New York, but still, that, then you got to travel out west again. Tomorrow's tough. You know, the Thursday game is going to be tough just from a schedule standpoint. But, yeah, you got a team you're better than. And I would say UC Saros is not playing that well this year, so you want to try to take advantage of that, assuming he starts as much as you can. I would say I don't think this is must-win for the Kings. But we may be. I have not been on, and I am not on the Fire Todd train, for the record. But like at some point, we're going to get closer to like, you better get a win, because somebody takes a fall for massive losing streaks like this with a team with expectations, and it inevitably will be the coach. So I'm not going to say that tomorrow. You know, Nashville's a must-win for McCollum, but at some point, if this continues, like, there's going to be a lot of cameras pointed his way.
I think it's just, I think it's something to look at, because I think it is almost a must-win game from a tone standpoint. Yeah. I forget who we played earlier in the month, but they were riding a losing streak too. And their announcers were saying, you know, like, this is a win game. And I think they set their franchise record on the season for block shots. Like, you just saw so much effort and really just trying to do everything they could to keep out goals. And you look at the 1-3-1 system and our defensive system and how we stop good chances, that comes from discipline. And like, when a team needs to win a game, they need to really look inside. And part of discipline is doing the hard things even when you don't really have to. And so when everything's going right, it's easy to say, hey, we're a 5-1. We can, you know, it's fun playing defense. It's not fun playing defense when you're losing games. And so, you know, like those types of things where all those adages, like, you know, get yourself up from the bootstraps and stuff like that, I think it's necessary for Thursday. I mean, I know the fans don't like to see the losing. I know that this Kings team believes they are a Stanley Cup caliber team and they don't like losing. But at some point, you know, I know Kopitar's not a rah-rah guy. I know a lot of the more lead by example guys, but it might be time for one of the more vocal leaders on the team to get in there and have a locker room only type meeting. And set some things straight for this homestand.
Stuff like that could be happening. You know, there could be meetings. We're not in that room, and I don't want to go too much into that, just because there could be meetings of such that are happening. There could be, you know, stuff like that happening. We just don't know. But you're right. I mean, I would agree that this is a key time for the leadership group to make sure that things stay intact and nothing kind of goes awry here any more than it has from a record standpoint. You want to keep the vibes as positive as they can be during a stretch like this.
Amber N coming in here. Condolences for last night, but keeping the faith with a $19.99 donation. Thank you, Amber. That'll plug in a little bit to the beer tab that I racked up last night at the venue. So, you know, really appreciate that, Amber. Thank you again for
being here. How are the concession stand prices in Dallas?
I mean, beer, 10, double 10 digits, yeah.
Kind of similar
to crypto. I think most of the league there. I think I read an article, and I don't know if I saw this. I think it was just the headline. I don't think I read the full article, but Dallas is like one of the top five in inflation prices over the last year. So, I mean, you're definitely seeing it in a lot of the meals and a lot of the beers outside the stadium. I mean, they just opened a taco spot down the street from where I live, and it's like I paid over $10 for a Modelo. You know, it's like, holy crap. Like, this seems like LA or New York prices there. I mean, it's not everywhere like that, but it's definitely not as high as crypto, I tell you that. Like over $20 a beer there.
A lot of disappointed Cowboy fans there.
Oh, it's great. Oh,
I'm sure Joe's in love with that, actually.
I love watching the Kings.
You guys are both kind of anti-Cowboy. I mean, you're a Niner fan. You're a Giants fan. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, the Kingdom is burning out here. They're like, oh, you know, let's fire Dak. Let's fire this. Let's fire that person.
Philly's going through it. Joe's having a great week in football.
Right.
So let's get to some questions here. I'll start with CJ. Randon, how was Clark live? You know, obviously the conductor over here had to enjoy watching Clark. Some things I noticed is, like I said, obviously the shuffling of the deep airs. They were trying to set him up for a lot of offensive plays in the offensive zone faceoff. So, you know, during TV timeouts or whatever, or as that full group was coming on the ice to take the faceoff, they were talking and trying to run plays. And I assume that happens most times, but they were all the faceoff guys were talking to Clark. Every single time they're coming on here, this is what I'm trying to do to set him up. Kopitar got kicked out of the circle. They brought in Byfield, and then Clark switched with Mikey Anderson because Byfield was going to go for a different style of draw play. So I thought it was really cool. They were trying to set the kid up, get him going. You definitely saw the good with the bad. I mean, he turned around to go and try to catch a guy on the side, and the guy, he got burned pretty bad. Luckily, he got cut him off at the last part, and the guy had to do a wraparound, and he got some help. But then I was telling Joe, like, he had like three, I think, controlled entries into the zone that I remember. And you saw one, him try to make like a saucer pass like 40 feet through three guys. And like, if it was just a little high on, I think it was Trevor Moore's tape, but you're talking about a sauce pass to a one-timer on a breakout from a kid. Like, he's just not afraid to try anything. So even though it doesn't seem like he's fully got his confidence like he maybe does in the AHL, he's still not afraid to try things. Like, I think he's still being Clark. I just don't think that he's been given the full reins, you know? And that, you know, as they say on the other guys, you know, he's a peacock. You got to let him fly. Like, you got to let him do that kind of stuff. And so it was nice to see that type of effort from him, you know, and the vision that it takes. I was hoping to see a goal, you know, and I think I told one of the older fans were asking me to, you know, to down beers and send videotapes or whatever he scores, which would have been done, but it didn't end up happening. So Holden 92 coming in here. What do you think is going on with Mikey? He's been looking really rough lately. That's even going back before the slump of the Kings. What do you guys think of Mikey Anderson's season so far, you know, at the halfway point? Do you think it's been rougher than normal? Do you think that the deep pair with him and Doughty has been less than stellar? Like, what's kind of your thought process on him so far this season?
I think Mikey started off pretty well. I mean, that pairing played pretty well to start the year. I think to start the road trip or to start this kind of downfall, like I mentioned from the Islander game, it certainly seems like those two have definitely struggled. Doughty's been a little bit more up and down than Mikey, but Mikey, yeah, I mean, he's kind of taking a little bit more of a downturn than Doughty on that top pair. And we saw it last night where McClellan was shuffling the defensive pairs and he had Mikey Anderson with Brian Clark for, I think, Joe, you had the minutes on that, didn't you?
7 minutes, I think they played together at 5-on-5.
Yeah, a little over seven minutes.
Yeah, and I think Doughty played with England like 9 minutes. So I don't know what's going on with Mikey. It's hard to pinpoint. I'm not saying put him lower in the lineup. Like, I wouldn't say break up Doughty and Clark or Doughty and Anderson at this point. But I don't know. It's just another player who's kind of struggled a lot more recently as opposed to what we've seen in the past from that type of player.
Joe, does it kind of make you nervous about his contract now? I mean, that he got that long-term deal after a couple of clutch seasons, obviously recency bias with him playing well in the playoffs both years. Like, does that kind of bother you? Like, if Doughty leaves, is he able to carry a top pair with another different offensive defenseman? Is he more end up being a second pair type guy? Like, how do you feel about him in that contract right now?
Well, to be clear, and I think I've said this on the pod for 3 years now, Mikey Anderson is not an NHL LD1, in my opinion. He's the LA Kings LD1. The pair with Doughty has worked really well. Mikey Anderson is probably best suited for like that kind of middle pair, right? So I don't think he would be expected to. I don't think he's a top pair D-man. I just think that pairing with Doughty worked so well. Now, you look at the things that Anderson does do quite well. He's, as every left defenseman in the Kings, really good at stopping and defending entries coming into the zone. Mikey Anderson is also kind of underrated in terms of getting the puck into the offensive zone. He leads the Kings defensemen in terms of controlled entry percentage, which probably would surprise some people given a blue line that has had, you know, Jordan Spence on it and Drew Doughty on it. But Mikey Anderson actually is very good in terms of controlling both blue lines. So in terms of the contract, no, I'm not worried. You know why? They didn't pay him top pair. They paid him what his value is, what, four and change, which that's about right. So I think he can comfortably play to that and probably then some through the duration of the contract. You know, I'm not worried about it because they didn't overpay him. I think they did make a lengthy commitment in term, which I always get nervous about. I don't like term, but he's 24 years old. So I'm not concerned. I think, again, because of the number, if you have the proper high-end RD1, he can complement that guy. If not, then he slides down the lineup, and it doesn't hurt you to have that salary down in the lineup. So I think his number's fine. I got no problem with it.
Russ Carter coming in here. Is Gavrikov playing hurt maybe? Maybe Kopitar too? I know the Kings are very close to the vest with their injury news. I mean, we had to get the Copley ACL news after he already posted it on Instagram about his knee brace. So obviously hockey players play with nagging stuff all season long. It's a brutal game, lots of hits and everything like that. Have you seen or heard anything around the locker room about any, you know, nagging injuries that people are playing through or anything like that with in regards to Gavrikov and Kopitar?
No, I haven't heard anything, seen anything. I mean, to suggest one of them are playing hurt, I mean, they could be. I mean, but to suggest it would probably just be more speculation at this point. So, I don't know. I think more or less it could just be an excuse for poor play. Yeah. And the players would probably even say it too. I mean, you can't just say, oh, yeah, they're playing worse, so they must be hurt. Like, no, I mean, at some point they're just playing worse. So, I think it's just as simple as that.
So let's get into this next topic here. I brought it up a little bit in the last game. He's played a couple games since being up. What have you guys seen about Clark's play? Obviously, you already mentioned, Joe, that you don't like his usage of the in and out. Do you think his time with the Kings is done for this season so far when they come back home? Kind of just give me an overview of what you think there, Russ.
Oh, man. I mean, first of all, I loved what Brian Clark was doing. I would have liked to see them give more offensive zone opportunities because, and you mentioned they were trying to give him as many as they could in Dallas. And I did notice that, but I think in the Washington game, it was really just kind of, they were holding him back from a lot more opportunities than they could have given him. I don't know, in certain situations like that, like it was kind of strange that they had him paired with Mikey Anderson. I didn't mind it. But as far as his individual play, I thought he was really, really good. Confidence was there. It's never going to be lacking with Brandon Clark. So that's good to see. And I thought he was still making the type of plays that you could see him making in the AHL. But as far as his future, I mean, at least for this year, in my opinion, I think you just have to send him back down. Because if they're not willing to figure out a way to utilize Brandon Clark and Jordan Spence in the same lineup, and your only option is to pull Jordan Spence and kind of switch them out every other game or so, that's a terrible strategy. You are losing, and Joe said it on end, you're losing probably one of your best defensive players and one of your best offensive producers from the blue line if you're doing that. And to have that be your strategy just makes no sense, especially for two young players that probably should be playing more than watching games from the press box. So I would actually not be surprised if they ended up doing it, just sending Brandon Clark back down to the AHL, and I think that would be the best option for him just to kind of get more minutes and play top pair minutes for the Rain for the time being. And then you give Spence a little bit more freedom to do what he's been doing throughout the entire season.
Yeah, I totally agree with your Washington assessment too. It's funny. I tweeted yesterday about how I'd only tracked two of his three games to date, and he was like second on the team in controlled entries and first among defensemen, first in shot assists. So like he was doing what I'm looking for is he doing the things that he's here for. Like what is he doing? And so I finally tracked the Washington game. It was all gain the red line, get it deep. Gain the red line, get it deep. Of his seven entries, six of them were dump ins. So he did, which he's now no longer anywhere near the top of the controlled entry percentage for defensemen. But I think that's because he was probably playing very safe. I think there is a little bit of a leash on him from the looks of it. At least that's like to me, I look at that and I see a player that's thinking. I see the player that's like, I don't want to make a mistake, make the right play. If I see a moment, Randon said there was a couple times in Dallas, if I see a chance to maybe try to make a play, fine, but don't go crazy with it and try to stay kind of, you know, safe. And if that's the case, okay. Again, I just get him back to Ontario. The fact that Jordan Spence is coming out of this lineup is mind-boggling. It is ludicrous to me for how good he's been this season in third pair minutes. I think it's absolutely crazy the fact that he's coming out of the lineup. And I don't understand where the logic for that is other than, well, he's young and we're going to rotate two young guys. Now, that's not acceptable to me. I don't buy that at all. So if you are not comfortable handing reins to Brant Clark, I understand that. I may not agree with it, but I get it, right? They're trying to work within their system, work within their structure. And if that's not going to fit, and if it's going to come at the expense of Jordan Spence, then Clark's got to go. He's got to go back to Ontario and just let him play, because this was nonsense taking Jordan Spence out of the lineup for how good I think that he's been. So I would say that it seemed in the three games, which, you know, obviously isn't a ton, he seems to be relatively safe, trying not to make too many mistakes, which is not how I want Brant Clark to play. I want him to play risky. But that said, like he's kind of doing what you hoped he was doing. So I had him for shot assist per 60. He is first among defensemen after these three games. So again, obviously severely limited ice time and severely limited sample size, but just to show that he's got 9 shot assists in the three games. Like, okay, so when he's in the offensive zone, he's trying to make something happen. And that's the goal. Like, that's what you're hoping for. More of that type of stuff.
I want to ask you guys this real quick, and Lieb will appreciate this. I see him active in the chat, so shout out to you, Lieb. But all these changes, especially this last game against Dallas, where we saw a lot of interchanging between defensemen and trying to figure out where to play Brant Clark, are you getting the sense that Rob Blake may be shopping Matt Roy? I'm kind of getting that feeling with this kind of utilization of trying to figure out where to play Spence and Clark, because if you're really using this strategy, because like that's really my only reasoning for to take out a player like Jordan Spence when he's been performing so well. We have the metrics to back it up. They're looking at the same metrics as we are. So to have that strategy, you're not going to pull out Matt Roy and try to see what they're both going to do in the lineup, because you obviously he's one of the better players, and they don't seem real too keen of moving one of those righties to left side, even though Colin said it might not happen at some point. But I don't know. It certainly feels like, I mean, in my opinion, I think the team would be worse off if they did trade Matt Roy, and I don't think they should. But just by everything that's been kind of going on these last few games and what we've heard from the coaching staff on how they're trying to get Clark and Jordan Spence into the lineup, you would think maybe Matt Roy might be on the outs come trade deadline. What do you think? I'll start with you, Randon. I'll ask you that question first.
Yeah, from a management standpoint, I was talking to a couple of people on Twitter about it. Like, there's a lot of people like, oh, well, you know, you don't want to let Roy go for nothing, right? If it's next year or whatever, and you're assuming that Spence and Clark are going to be full-timers, you don't want to let him go for nothing. So you might as well trade him, maybe get a better piece on the left or just open up some cap space or do this kind of thing. But like this team isn't playing for next year. This team is playing for this year. And I think the team is incredibly worse on the back end without Matt Roy. So, you know, I understand Clark's usage and maybe not playing him on the left and let him be on the side that he's accustomed to being on. But as far as trading Roy to make room, I mean, they might be seeing what it looks like next season to see if they need to re-sign him instead of maybe it's not a deadline thing. Maybe it's like, okay, well, let's kind of shuffle it up and see if we can catch gold. And, you know, I mean, I guess if let's just play crystal ball in the best positive outlook. What if Clark came up and he had 4 points in the three games that he played? Mm-hmm. Then you might be thinking about trading Roy, because then you think you have a guy in Clark who's already playing at an NHL level and can go forward. So I don't know if they're actively looking to shop Roy, but I do think it's a trying to see what we have in a guy like Clark and maybe where he fits on that team. Cause you would assume that you want him to be RD1 in two seasons, right? When he's starting to get his prime at 22, 23 years old. So I guess, yeah. Where does that fit and how does his game and where is that trajectory? You know, I think GMs and head coaches are always trying to tinker in that aspect.
Joe, before we go to you, I just want to say another reason I thought about this is because in that first game that they had Clark up, he was playing with Gavrikov, mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty strange. And then the next few games they had it with Englund. And then I think in between that game, then they had him with Anderson. So, I mean, he's played with everybody. I think Randy mm-hmm. mentioned that. He's played with every lefty. So what do you think in that?
I really just would be surprised if Matt Roy is traded. I really would, because he's arguably the best defensive defenseman on the team, I think. I mean, he's just a rock there. So I would be surprised only because it would be a total shift in style, right, with Clark. So in this scenario, in this question, would be Clark, I would imagine, replacing Matt Roy or Spence moving up. But either way, you now have Spence and Clark both on the right side. That is a drastically different right side. And I still maintain, and Randon, I think, kind of alluded to it earlier, like I acknowledge that I still have some uncertainty about Clark going back on a puck, on a retrieval, where Matt Roy does a really nice job of that, I would say. So I don't know. I do think it's the Kings trying to sort of figure out what they have and maybe looking at it that way in an assessment. I don't know if I'm expecting them to, if I don't know if I tie that to Matt Roy could be out, because I just don't see how that makes your team better. Now, if the Kings continue this free fall and come deadline time, the Kings are on the outside looking in. Now, maybe that's a situation where the Kings and Blake could say, well, we got Clark and Spence. We can just play them both anyways. Maybe we see what we can get for Roy, because if the intent is not to bring him back, then maybe that's a situation that comes up. But if you're talking about a team that's third in the division or second in the division, or maybe, or even in the wild card, you know, this is a team with Matt Roy that can, you know, win a playoff round. I mean, obviously it depends. I mean, and I'm all for, I think everybody knows I'm all for give me as much offense as you can. Give me as much as far as skating and skating defensemen as you can. Matt Roy ain't the one I'm moving out, though. I would rather keep him, try to make a run in playoffs and risk losing him in the offseason, frankly, than trade him at the risk that the blue line takes a significant hit. Now, who knows? It depends what they trade him for, of course, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that in that scenario, but I don't know. I'm not there. I see the logic, but I'm not there.
Yeah, it'd have to be like a actual hockey trade.
That's what makes it so tough.
And it's so hard to find those type of teams to negotiate with, right? Because you're trading a player who's on an expiring deal. And you're hoping to get some quality NHL talent back if you're the Kings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rob Blake would certainly have to do have his work cut out from there. But, I mean, in my opinion, I view Matt Roy as the rental, as the trade deadline rental. You kind of look at it that way. So you can – all the pieces that you could possibly get, maybe future assets that you could get in a Matt Roy trade, let's say if the Kings weren't in the playoffs, he would 100% be traded because he's an expiring contract. So some of that future assets you can get in a deal for Matt Roy, just imagine you're utilizing those assets to keep him for the rest of the team. So I view him as a rental for this team, and I agree. Like, I think if this team would be worse off without Matt Roy in the lineup. But I can see the argument to kind of look to see what you can get outside the organization.
I get the logic.
Like, Blake should be fielding phone calls. Like, there's no reason for him to, like,
hang up the phone
on GMs. But, like,
it's just hard for me to imagine Matt Roy being a player that brings a lot back that helped the Kings right now, because he is an expiring contract. He's going to be 29 at this sometime next season, or almost there. Okay, so this isn't – he needs a contract. Like you said, Russ, he's a good fit for, like, a hockey trade type of thing, but – I don't know that we're going to see a lot of I don't think you see too many trades involving a player of that caliber that is a hockey trade. It's usually kind of a selling team to a buying team. So, like, I have no interest in trading Roy for futures. You know, if I saw somebody, I think it was Kevin Sauer here in the chat that said, go to, you know, trade Roy to Minnesota for Jake Middleton, a lefty, and then, you know, knock Englund out to seventh defenseman and get Spence. Yeah, that's a hockey trade. Why does Minnesota do that? Right? Like, this is where it gets tricky, because then you got to figure the team that you're sending him to, you're going to add to Matt Roy, because you have to add prospects, picks, whatever the case may be, because who's going to want I don't want to say aging because he's under 30, but like a high 20s defenseman who needs a contract. I don't know how attractive that is to a team. I don't know. That's tough. So I think that's a really tricky one, which is why I'd be surprised to see something happen, but maybe.
I'm ready for those asset management tweets when he gets signed by someone else in the summer.
Yeah, but you know what?
But that's the thing. It's like, I don't understand that, because he was a seventh round pick. I would say you got great.
Please. Ridiculous. Not.
But also, you got to remember the context. If the Kings are in the top three in the division or in a playoff spot, it's not reasonable to expect them to trade him. I don't think. Again, assuming the trade is for, like, futures. I don't know.
Like, what future are you getting? Maybe a second?
You could probably get a first for him, to be honest with you, like a high first. But even then, like that, like what Joe said, like, we're not looking for futures here.
Because here's the thing: you're trading him to you're going to cut in half your potential people you're trading him to, because you're not going to trade him to the West, because you're probably going to see him in playoffs, because only a contender is going to buy him. So then you're going to go to the East. So that now limits your potential bidders to only a handful of teams, because not all of them A, can afford him, and not all of them need a right shot D. So you're talking about really limiting. So unless there's a hockey trade to be made, I don't know. Be cool if there is a hockey trade. We don't see enough hockey trades. I would love it. I hope there is, but I just
try to fleece Toronto again.
Hey, maybe get like a David Perron from Detroit for Matt Roy. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out there.
I love Toffoli. I love it. I think I would rather go.
Lefty.
I'm sorry. Yes, I forget his name already. It's Kevin Sauer, I think it was. Sorry, Kevin, if that's who it was. I kind of like that idea better, I think, but not opposed to something like that.
Russ, I'm just rambling names, but like middle six forward.
Right. Yeah.
You brought up Roy. I mean, and I know, I mean, there's a lot of forwards in the system, and there's got to be some RFA assets as well on the forward blend that they could maybe pair with Roy if they really wanted to do something like that and try to just free up some from space. Mm-hmm. Obviously, LaFerriere making the team kind of probably threw a wrench in their plans, and a good wrench at that. But as far as the pecking order and the forward group, you know, you would assume that they probably had plans to play Turcotte of several games up here this season. You know, Fagimo out of camp, and LeFerrier kind of threw a wrench in that that aspect.
It's a good wrench, though. It's a shiny, brand new Black and Decker wrench. Who makes two?
Let's get into our sponsor here for us here at Hockey Royalty, which is our friends here at DraftKings. We all know hockey games move fast, but DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet just $5 and get 200 200 instantly in bonus bets. Obviously, the goal differential odds for tomorrow's game is going to be 1.5. So if you want to favor the Kings to set the tone here on this homestand, you can do so. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now with code THPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NHL and get 200 in bonus bets instantly only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. So let's get into the Edmonton elephant in the room here. Obviously, won 11 straight. They're on a roll. We mentioned the Vegas Golden Knights kind of doing a downfall. I know it's not the, you know, Pacific, you know, reveal that we normally do at the beginning of the month, but I think it's a good view here in the midway part of the season, at least for the Kings. If you're taking a look at the standings right now, Vancouver's got 62 points, not slowing down at all, 7-2-1 in their last 10. Golden Knights at 55, 4-6 in their last 10. Kings at 50, 1-5-4. And the Oilers have won 10 straight, and the Flames aren't too far behind at 7-3, and the Kraken are 8 of their last 10 at 47 points apiece there. So most of the Pacific is heating up. Kings are heating down. Where does this look at here for you? Obviously, the Kings can turn it around at any moment, but the Pacific looks a whole lot scarier at this moment of the season after that losing streak.
I think the Pacific is just looking like what we kind of expected it to look like now. The Oilers are just doing – I don't know why this is so surprising to everybody. I mean, everybody was talking about how they're kind of like what the Kings are kind of going through right now. I mean, everyone was talking about how the Oilers just weren't finishing. I mean, they weren't – their goals for above expected was like last in the league. They were still getting their chances. They were like first in expected goal share. They weren't really getting the saves, obviously. So a lot of the similarities that the Kings kind of went through last year with their goaltending issues. So, I mean, you look at Edmonton. The new coaching staff came in and like changed a bunch of systems. Just all those pucks are going in now and they're making saves. So you have a team that had high expectations coming in this year who is now just playing up to what everybody expected them to be. So, I mean, I don't expect them to win 20 straight or set franchise records. But, I mean, I'd have to look back. But I think most of us or a couple of us picked the Oilers to come in first. Or actually, I picked the Kings to win first. But I think
the Oilers to go first in division. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So I think this is – I mean, we picked five teams to go to the playoffs to come out of the Pacific. So you kind of look at how everything's shaping up. It's certainly looking to be the case. Especially with how bad some of the central teams are kind of playing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we said on the show, like, who's going to be surprised when Edmonton does what LA does and goes on an 11-3 run or whatever the Kings record was at the time, 14-3. Like,
damn it, Joe.
Remember, McDavid was hurt too. He was not healthy. He was playing through it. And so the difference is, I don't know, this is maybe a little unfair, but see where it goes. Let's just see where this goes. Like the difference with Edmonton, where you could feel so confident that like, okay, eventually these pucks are going to go in because it's McDavid and Draisaitl, right? And Nugent Hopkins had 100 points last year. Even if they were on the power play, they still got to go in. So eventually these points were going to come. Like that's the one thing the Kings don't really have is that elite game breaker. Like Kevin Fiala is the closest thing they have to it, right? And I'm down with Kev, don't get me wrong, but like they the confidence level in the Oilers finding the back end of the net on a much more regular basis, I feel way more confident in that than the Kings, just because the Kings, they do it with depth, which is great, don't get me wrong, but you want to be able to have those one or two guys that are that elite high-end talent. And, you know, Kempe's starting to it's coming with Kempe. At times he can be streaky, but it's coming. And Kevin Fiala is a pretty consistent point producer, but like nobody on the Kings would project to have 100 points, maybe even 90 points, right? So where I'm getting at is like McDavid and Draisaitl are going to get theirs. They're going to get 100 points. McDavid's going to get 130 points. Like this is, these are just such high-end elite players that the Kings, just few teams have those, right? So thank you, Lee. Comes in with Trevor Moore. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, obviously, Trevor Moore, I'm setting aside here. He's the exception. Of course, he's the elite talent. But you see where I'm getting at. It's like the Kings do it with from a team-wide approach. Like they do have excellent players. Like obviously, Andre Kopitar is still playing at a high level. I mentioned Kevin Fiala, Adrian Kempe. You know, Moore's having a breakout. So it's not as if, you know, there's not talent here. It's just it's much more in the mold of we're going to get you for 200 feet type of play. You know what
then
I mean?
Joe, when they were winning the cups, would you say their elite players were in goal and then Drew? So even then they didn't have an offensive juggernaut to.
Well, but the different, like, but Kopitar was like peak dominance, right. At both ends of the ice. And let's not forget, I mean, Jeff Carter was still a hell of a player, but you're right. Yeah. I mean, Quick and Doughty were ridiculous. You know, Muzzin was back there. They had the depth and the D, not totally unlike what you see today. But yeah, I mean, they did it in a approach of like of being strong in net. They had an elite RD1, and then you had what could be argued the best two-way center in the game, or you know, at least the best defensive center who, you know, was just so dominant that he carried. He kind of did in a lot of ways what Sidney Crosby does. Like Crosby plays with a lot of really great, with good players, but not household names. And Kopitar did it in a different way. Like Crosby does by putting up 100 points. Kopitar just carried his entire line for 200 feet, it seemed. I mean, him and Dustin Brown, like how many left wingers did they go through over the years before they never really found one, you know?
Justin Williams, outside of that, pretty much.
Right. He eventually, when he came along and he played a bit, but it's like it was a team that's similar to this year, but I would say you got Kopitar and Doughty 12 years ago. So they were way more at their peaks, you know?
Russ, do you think, looking at the Pacific and whatever it is, what we thought and all that kind of stuff like that, does this Kings team have to, you know, get second or third or this or that type of thing, or they just got to get hot at the right time? I mean, it seems like they've already been hot, and when they were a juggernaut style team. Is it more about just kind of getting right in the ship and then getting things hot come April?
I mean, to be honest with you, I really just don't want to face Edmonton in round one. So if it's second, third, wild card, anything to kind of avoid Edmonton, even though, I mean, that would really just put the Kings to the test, and having that first round win over Edmonton would certainly turn a lot of the recent playoff struggles upside down. So as far as where like they should be finishing in the Pacific, it's tough because, I mean, a lot of these teams are really good. Some are struggling, like the Golden Knights and the Kings are. But, I mean, Edmonton doesn't look like they're going to go anywhere. I would pretty much expect them to probably be the first or second seed if they can catch Vancouver. And as much as everybody wants to write off Vancouver, I've said that probably three or four times already on this podcast. They're right there, and it doesn't look like they're going anywhere. So, I don't know. Could be the third seed again. And might have to fight Vegas for it, and it certainly looks to be another first round game one matchup in Edmonton.
Just don't play the Oilers.
Wouldn't that be a series though? Kings Jets round one.
Oh, Kings Jets. Yeah, that would be a fun series, I guess.
But it'd definitely be one for the storylines, for sure. Well, speaking of storylines, there's going to be a few coming out tomorrow. Blake has a presser tomorrow to talk about the season so far. Our one and only Russ is going to be there. But I think there's going to be some – having a presser coming off a losing streak, I think you're going to get you should get more pressing questions, if you will, than you would if the team's flying high. When teams flying high, there's really nothing to ask, right? Like maybe what do you see bringing in to make this team better? But when you see cracks in the paint, the questions generally should get more, you know, more tough in that direction. I'm going to start with you, Joe. Do you think that there is stuff that Blake needs to answer for regarding to this season? And then where would your questions maybe go in your eyes?
Well, yeah, he's the general manager of the team. So I think, you know, they're unfortunately for him, the timing of this couldn't be worse because it's coming off this just horrible stretch. Like,
please win.
So it is really laughable type of thing. He's got to be like, what the f-?
I know. I had people messaging me like saying, like, was this scheduled prior? Like, is this going to be a big announcement? I'm like, I don't know. It was probably scheduled prior. It's a midseason. It seems like, I think, I forgot to mention it, but it seems like more teams across the league are doing this now, this midseason kind of update.
Yeah. So, yeah, he does. I mean, I think it's very fair to, you know, he's, again, he's the general manager of the team. And what, in his view, is the problem right now, because he's going to be the one that's tasked with fixing it. Be it via trade or via call up or whatever it might be, like it's going to be on him to do it. So, you know, I guess was among the questions would be, where does he see the issues right now with this team? Is it something that is to be fixed in a trade? And obviously the Kings cap is going to have a lot to do with that. Is it something that can be fixed, or is there something to be called up? Or a player to be called up, like, for, you know, with Lazat's injury, what is that? Do you see somebody like a Alex Turcotte called up to play fourth line center? Is that something of an option? You know, in terms of kind of looking forward, I think those are questions you could ask. I mean, if I'd be surprised if he doesn't get asked, because I don't know that has he been asked yet since the trade was made. Like, So where are we with Pierre-Luc Dubois? Like, I'm assuming his name is going to come up tomorrow in some fashion, because, you know, for better, for worse. And I know, you know, Russ and I were fans of the trade, and I think, I won't speak for Russ, but I still am. I still am a believer in Dubois, and kind of, you know, over the long term here and what he can do in playoffs. But obviously production wise, I think at the same time, if you're the GM, you know his production is going to be down if he's playing far less minutes on a third line role, but it shouldn't be down this much. So I think there's going to be a PLD question, and I think that's fair that there is a PLD question. I don't know how much they'll get into the specifics of it, and, you know, if anybody would compare it to Vilardi and go back to the whole, hey, would Vilardi, did he want to be here type of thing? Because there's a lot of those rumors about all that stuff. But I think, looking ahead, where does he see the problems? What's going on with the team right now? How do you fix it? Where do you fix it? And I think Dubois is probably the biggest question in terms of looking back at the season. And a question to Blake would be Dubois. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I actually went back. So this will be the first time we've heard from Blake since the season started, since October 10th. So right before the season started. So this is our first conversation or media availability with him. I have four things that I've kind of written down that I'd like to hear from Blake, and I'm sure I'm 100% sure they'll get asked. I mean, first and foremost, obviously, I think it's Pierre-Luc Dubois. I went back and listened to his availability when the trade was made, and one line that caught my eye was Rob Blake saying he's a player that can add production right away, and that's certainly not been the case. So I would ask him, like, has Pierre-Luc Dubois lived up to your expectations, or what were your original expectations for Pierre-Luc Dubois? And hopefully we get an answer there. Another one would be, what's your strategy going forward to implement Brent Clark into the lineup? And how difficult a decision is it to take a player like Jordan Spence out of the lineup, who's been so good and a lot of 5-on-5 on ice metrics? That's something. Another one is, what's his confidence level in the current goaltending group? Do you feel Cam Talbot and David Rittich can carry you to the end of the season and into a playoff series? And then the first one, I think, is actually, yeah, it's those three. So I think those are three of the questions. And then a lot of people are going to be wondering probably maybe if he feels like the team continues on this downward spiral, do you feel a coaching change might be necessary? Might be another question that probably might have to be asked.
Oh, yeah. Again, timing, yeah. Timing sucks because
exactly. You look at it like, Joe, you were talking about it with us in our private chat this morning about how Buffalo gets asked these questions left and right. And I would say that the only thing I'll say with that, like Buffalo, I totally get because a lot of expectations there were them to at least maybe make some noise as a playoff spot contender. And they're really having real bad struggles mm-hmm. over there. I mean, I'm not really paying attention, but it certainly feels like they're not living up to their expectations. But I mean, I can tell you right now, just by everything we've heard from Rob Blake and McClellan, just kind of listening to a lot of them talk over the last couple of years, they're going to point to them saying, we're on pace for 100 points. That's all they're going to point to, left and right. I mean, as sure, you can put makeup on a pig for how bad the team has looked lately, but I mean, that's more than likely going to be the answer. But if this team continues on the downward spiral that they're on now, like there's going to have to be some changes because, I mean, I would think that at least just making the playoffs would be good enough for this team. But I don't know, being a wild card team might be kind of disappointing, even though you could be getting away from Edmonton in the first round. But, man, if you do not make it past the first round, then I could be on the train for making a coaching change at that point because you can't have three straight seasons. You can't go 10-plus years now without a playoff series win, especially with all the moves that have been made, all these upgrades that have been made. You've talked about being a deeper team down the middle and trying to emulate a little bit of what Vegas has been doing. So if you're not building a team that's going to be successful in the regular season like we're seeing from Edmonton or Colorado or Boston, all these teams that built for success in the regular season but kind of falter a little bit in the playoffs, even though Colorado just won the cup. But if you're not building that playoff success, then heads are going to start rolling. Maybe mm-hmm. some changes are going to be needed to be made.
You know, it's so funny because I was talking to a fan about Mike Tomlin for the Steelers. And everybody's like, yeah, I think they should fire Mike Tomlin. And I'm like, really? Like, I mean, the guy's had a losing season. He's like, yeah, but he also hasn't won a playoff game since 2008. Like, so like,
what? Long time.
Like, yeah. So like you're good enough to win games. You're a good regular season coach, but you're not getting it done. And at what time do you have to pull the ripcord on that? So that would be an interesting question there. And I know Todd has always seemed like a guy who takes accountability for when the team's not playing well. So I assume if you asked him that question, do you feel like you're on the hot seat? He probably would say yes. But, you know, I think – or not yes, but he would say, yeah, we need to play better and take ownership of the situation. But I think another one would be what is the reasonable expectation for Victor Arvidsson? You know, yeah. do you feel him as an actual possibility to help this team down the stretch, or is this just kind of a smokescreen that's being used at this point? Because, you know, obviously that would be huge for the team to get a 60-point producer back on the third line to play with Laferriere and PLD. I think so. Because, and I don't know if this is a fair assessment. I don't know. I'm not in the locker room for every single media availability. So I don't know how other teams operate, but it seems like the Kings keep their injury situations close to the vest to where, like I said, like we didn't even know they put out Copley's surgery like after he did on Instagram, right? So
we learned about Lizotte's return on the ESPN broadcast.
So, you know, is that something that's like, you know, is that reasonable? Because obviously a 60-point producer would definitely jumpstart the offense again and make the Kings that much deeper. So I think that would be something that I would be interested to see, you know, what that reasonable expectation is. Because we talked about in the beginning of the season, I mean, outside of LTIR money, which you are using if Victor Arvidsson's out, there's not really not much money to use for an acquisition without sending mm-hmm. money the other direction. So he would be the acquisition at that point. And is that reasonable to think that that's a possibility, or are we just kind of hopes and dreams at that point?
You know, it's funny. I'm that's a really good point, Randy, because that's something that at least we haven't talked about at all. As we just say, you know, if and when he comes back, it'd be a great add to the lineup, just assuming he's coming back in at tip-top form, which is probably not a fair expectation, at least early in the first couple weeks. He's probably going to need a couple weeks to get back into it. And it is a, correct me if I'm wrong, a back situation. It was a back situation that he had to get a procedure done. So those just seem to reoccur. Hopefully not. I hope that's not the case. But yeah, I think that's a good point, Randon, that there's this assumption that, well, Arvidsson comes back and there's your trade deadline acquisition. Everything is all roses. But, you know,
is it a Mark Stone situation to where he only comes back in the playoffs and they can use his LTIR to help the season? Like, is that type of what they're expecting?
Well, you know, if they were rolling along still, maybe they could do that. But now they kind of don't have the luxury to do that. They got to actually get in playoffs, so they might need him sooner.
I mean, you could LTIR him and then use his cap space to get somebody. I think that's what Vegas ended up doing. That's how they got Barbashev, right?
Yeah.
Kind of utilized a little of the magic. But I'm sure a lot of those, like, when's Arvidsson going to be back? What's Matt Roy and Victor Arvidsson's contract situation? What's Quinn Byfield's contract situation? I'm sure those questions will get asked. I mean, those are all like top line questions that everybody wants to know. So that'll I'm sure those would be one of the first ones asked from the media.
Yeah,
should be fun though.
It should be like and I'm sorry, like this shouldn't be fun. Probably shouldn't be a fun day for Rob Blake. I mean, I wish it was different. I wish it was a different circumstance and the Kings were still rolling and they were, you know, chasing Vancouver. But things aren't going well. And you know, you have to answer the bell for these. So hopefully, and I'm not saying he's got to give the ingredients to the secret sauce or anything like that. But obviously, there's going to be people want answers to certain questions. And that's just the nature of the gig, and I'm sure he'll be just thrilled to go through the process.
It's gonna be rough, to say the least. I'm sure. Yeah, like you mentioned, with all the, but it's, I'm sure it's not as bad as everything that's going on in Toronto right now.
Wow.
Did you guys see that quote from Sheldon Keefe about how he doesn't know who he can trust on the ice? Like, when you have a coach saying something like that about when you just gave a player like an 11.5 a year mil a year deal, like you don't know who you can trust at that point. That's when I'd be like, okay, like what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, Keefe's an interesting one. He's not afraid to kind of fly off occasionally. And where Todd McLellan, for better or for worse, I love his availabilities. Like, but he's very, but at the same time, he is. I don't want to say calculated, but he knows what he's saying. He's not new at this. He's done it before, but he's very thoughtful in how he gives his responses. It very rarely does it seem like Todd McLellan is emotional. And that's an emotional answer from Keefe, right? Todd McLellan does seem to have a really good check on his emotion when answering questions, even after, you know, tough losses.
I think he's calculated. And he's also like, he knows like how to like, I think he like twists the knife a little bit sometimes, like, and like, hey, like this player, they ask about certain things. Like, it's almost like, you know, like what they call them, like backhand compliments. Like, oh, your hair looks nice for being that greasy. You're like, what are you saying?
What was the comment? I almost fell out of the chair when I saw something. Somebody asked the question at Kaliev had gotten benched and said something like, what, you know, what didn't you like about Kaliev's game or something like that? He goes, all of it. And that was
that's the thing. Like, McLellan's always very transparent with every question that gets asked to him.
He's thoughtful, and I really like his availability.
You want to know what's going on with the team, is just listen to Todd McLellan's presser. He'll straight up tell you. I mean, you may not get a lot of the questions that you might be looking for, but like for everything that he gets asked, he gives a very thoughtful, analytical answer to it.
And you may not like the answer, but he was asked and he said, listen, I know I'm going to get this question every time I put in Spencer Clark, but this is what we're doing. Here's how we're doing it. You know, so like and you can appreciate that. You don't always have to like the answer, but always, I think his, again, I've said it before, he's got great job with his availabilities.
Yeah. I think he does a good job there where it's like, sometimes I see like Kyle Shanahan's answer, and like he seems like he just gets upset with the reporter for asking a question, you know, like almost like almost like you're talking to me that way. I'm Kyle Shanahan, you know, like how dare you talk to the god of the Niners like that way. So
I saw some Eagles players today getting at the reporters for asking them about Sirianni, and it's like, I mean, man, when you get in these situations, it's that room gets tense. It's like, mm-hmm. you want fans? This is what the fans want. They want to ask these questions. They want you to ask these questions, and it's going to create a little bit of a tense environment, but part of the job. They understand it, though.
There's a pretty wide range of expectations, you know, and obviously a team like Philly that was in the Super Bowl and then they lose five out of their last six and don't even put up a fight against Tampa. Like, those are expectations for a very proud Eagles team. Like, I wonder, you know, and it's something that we're just used to in this LA market. And I think a lot of people kind of just, that's why, hey, you know, Dubois came here because it's a little bit more lax. You know, Deneau said it was nice as a player not to get a billion questions after every single game, you know, with minute detail, you know, so I wonder if Rob Lake maybe takes it for granted that he's in a market like this, and will he get the type of questions that he would have gotten all year long in Toronto or in Philly or in Boston or those types of places that have larger hockey markets. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about.
I like you use the word expectations there, and I want to go back to that because I think the other thing to keep in mind is what exactly were, like, the Kings didn't come into this season. They came into this season, in my opinion, thinking, okay, progress, win a playoff rounds, let's see. And at that point, let's see, are we contenders? I don't think this wasn't like a cup or bust type of season, right? So I think that there's the start that the team had them on this trajectory of like, holy cow, this is a legit cup contender. And that maybe seemed to alter some expectations for people. But I suspect that in Blake and the management, their expectations didn't budge because of a great start or because of this bad stretch. Their expectations were, we need to make progress. We need to make progress with the individual players. We need to make progress with our play, making playoffs. Ideally, that means better than let's host the first round, right? Maybe that's progress. Let's win that first round. That's progress. So that's why I go back to, I don't know where, you know, for as much as people want McClellan gone, I'm not sure, just because the expectations for the season, you know, Russ, you had said, hey, we're still on pace for 100 points. And you know what? Like, it still is true. You know, it's how you get there. Like, Edmonton had to make their change real early. How far do you let this go before it is necessary to make a change? And all of a sudden you're not anymore on pace for 100 points. So, but I think that expectation is important, because this was never a season of cup or bust. I don't think. I think this was maybe year one of like, this team could make a deep run, but like, this window is not that big, assuming you want to win, do this right. All the talk with Kopitar, Doughty. So you don't have much left in this, but this is maybe year one of like that 3-year window with those two to try to make a run here. So it doesn't have, it's not as if it has to be this year. And I'm not meaning to say that while we should be okay with, you know, a 1-9 stretch, but I think it's important to just remember that.
Yeah, I remember actually when I was watching his preseason media availability, Rob Blake he was asked that question, like, is this team like a Stanley Cup or bust or Stanley Cup contender? I think Dennis Bernstein asked that question, and he tiptoed around it. Rob Blake did, and kind of just gave that typical GM answer, like, oh, if everything goes right and we get the goaltending, we get all four playing well, all four areas or whatever, penalty kill, special teams, everything like that, we should be able to contend there or something like that. So he didn't necessarily come out and say, like, oh, this is Stanley Cup or bust, or we have to win a first-round series. But kind of probably another question I wouldn't mind being answered is like, say, asking him, like, is anything less than a first round exit or anything less than a first round win a success or a failure to this team? So I think that's something that, because I mean, that's, I feel like that's been the main thing that everyone's been pointing to, what I've kind of been looking at. I mean, I wouldn't say like if they made it to the like Western Conference Finals and ended up losing in 7 games to Edmonton or something like that, I don't think anybody would deem this season a failure at all, because you're making progress. But if you're not able to win a playoff series, after what you've said the last 2 years and what has transpired so far, then we'll start having that conversation. But I guess you have to get to the playoffs first.
Yeah, I see Carter scores that, in his opinion, is his cup or bust once they acquired Dubois. I disagree. Dubois wasn't a rental. Dubois here for a duration. That was a huge piece, seen as a huge piece to help them get closer to a cup. But cup or bust would have been – he's not signed. You only signed him to 8-year deal and cup or bust in year one. So I don't quite agree with that personally.
But if they're if the goal, like Russ said, is to win with the old guard still intact with Kopitar and Doughty, that's what, 2 seasons? Right.
I'm saying 3, but
after
yeah.
This one, yeah. After this one, right? So, yeah. So like, yeah, where are we not in the window? Like I know the expectations to start the season. It would be foolish for Rob Blake to come out and say, hey, you know, we're a Stanley Cup contender and it's Stanley Cup or bust right now. It would be foolish for him to say that because he seems like the guy that kind of gives the corporate speak type answers. But if that's their goal, and they've openly said that that's their goal to hopefully win a championship with Kopitar, when is it not cup or bust this one? Like it's got to be next season at least.
That's why I said this year there needed to be progress. Whether that progress is winning the division, whether that progress is winning a playoff round or two, there needs to be some progress because in that next year, the next 2 years after this, the expectation I imagine, I would hope, is now we're contenders, right? So I'm not saying that this year is cup or bust, but that cup with the old guard, as you call it, we got to be talking within, 3 years here, this year plus 2 more, maybe a third if you can, because Kopitar doesn't really look like he just doesn't age. So maybe you get that extra year out of him at playing at such a high level. So I think you got this 1 to 3 year window of at least doing it with these guys. That doesn't mean the window shuts, right? Because there's other players, a young group of guys, defensemen, Dubois. We'll see what other players they bring in. Fiala's here for a while. So it doesn't mean the window itself is closed, but if you're looking to do it with the Kopitar Doughty, then, that's gotta be, where this is year one of, I'd say, 3 year opportunity, maybe 4 if things go right.
Yeah, let's say if they don't win a playoff series, then going into next year, all the talk is going to be how can they get past the first round.
Yeah,
so that's why that's Toronto Maple Leaf talk. How do you win a playoff series? And it happened for them last year, but they never really got. I think they ended up getting to the finals, but either way. So that's why I feel like you have to win a playoff series this year to kind of get away from that conversation. So that way you can look forward and say, okay, we made noise in the playoffs. Let's see how much further we can get. And let's try to win a Stanley Cup. But I'll tell you, Brandon, the one area or one date that we'll be looking at to see if this is really Stanley Cup or bust is the trade deadline to see mm-hmm. how creative Rob Blake gets. Because if he kind of stands pat with the roster he has now, and you can talk about Victor Arvidsson coming back and being the rental piece, but if he kind of stands pat, then I don't think this is considered a Stanley Cup or bust season, because it certainly doesn't seem like they're utilizing a lot of their assets or being creative with salary cap as much as they can be in order to upgrade this team as much as you can. So, that's what Toronto did last year. Look at all the moves they made. Like, they brought in 4 or 5 guys just to try to do whatever they could to win a playoff series and go to the Stanley Cup, and didn't really happen for them. But yeah, if you're not being creative at the trade deadline, then
and he's he can be shown that he's willing to be creative. The guy traded a friggin' franchise legend last year in Jonathan.
Exactly, Quinn. Yeah.
So I don't think people should question Blake's willingness to do something. Because I think he answered that question last year with addressing the goaltending with trading Quick. So it's just a matter of, I think he probably has, now they're in assessment mode. They got to see how these next few weeks go. And maybe that's another question for tomorrow, is how much do these next, 3 weeks, say 2 to 4 weeks, determine what you do as you approach the trade deadline, right? Is everything hinging on this, or is this plan going to be what it is regardless? So I think that's, I don't know. I don't ever feel bad for Rob Blake's doing well, but man, tough spot to be in tomorrow after this stretch.
We got some other expectations. Carter scores coming in. So minimum Western Conference Finals is his expectation. Okay. Cy coming in here. A competitive second round minimum is my expectation. So first round win, be That's competitive in that at, second Cy, series.
Yeah.
So you know, we have some people saying that there isn't a window for this team right now. Some people say it's a 2 or 3 year window. So a lot of difference in opinions. And when your team starts losing, the criticism starts flying at all the time. And you know, Rob Blake and Tom McClellan aren't immune to that. So I think that's going to do it for here at us at Hockey Royalty, unless you wanted to add something, Russ. You looked like you were itching to say something.
No, it's just I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
looking forward to tomorrow. I just want to see a win.
Should be a fun day.
So I appreciate you guys for coming in the chat today. Thank you guys always for lighting that bad boy up. We still have our Trevor Moore t-shirts. Still get them while they're hot off the presses. $30 their size, small through extra large. Contact at hockeyroyalty.com, and we can do Venmo for most of it. If you need a little accommodation, we can make that work for you. You can find us at hockeyroyalty.com, hockey_royalty at Reina Commando 24, NHL Russell, and JW Paterino. All your rain coverage is done by Kyle at Kopitar for HOF. Please use our DraftKings code to get yourself some extra money. Code THPN. Bet on the game tomorrow. Let's get some dubs. Let's get the good vibe. Let's shake off the bad vibes. Let's come home, get some home cooking, you know, maybe a nice little California burrito and get this game going with a nice dub. Thank you guys so much for coming in here. And on always on this podcast, Go Kings Go.